From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. On Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments in a major case around religious freedom that has made its way through the legal system over several years. At the heart of the case is the right of a Colorado cake maker named Jack Phillips to not design cakes for people who he feels are violating his religious beliefs, namely same-sex couples seeking to get married. Backing Phillips is a well-funded organization called Alliance Defending Freedom, or ADF, which has been designated as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, a new investigation by reporter Sarah Posner has uncovered the veritable army of lawyers that ADF trains and deploys to further its religious fundamentalist agenda. Sarah Posner is a reporter with the Investigative Fund at the Nation Institute, and her article in the Nation about this issue is called "The Christian Legal Army Behind Masterpiece Cake Shop." She's also the author of the 2008 book God's Prophets, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters. Welcome to the program, Sarah.
Thank you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, before we get into what ADF does, let's talk about how it was that they chose Jack Phillips as this person behind which to rally, since this is the case that's moving in front of the Supreme Court. Why was he someone that they elevated and poured their resources into?
Well, he's certainly not the only one. ADF has also petitioned the Supreme Court to hear a very similar case involving a florist who also declined to provide flowers for a same-sex wedding. It just happens that the timing of Phillips's case reached the Supreme Court first. But ADF has long sought such a case involving a vendor that they have transformed into an artist. So to them, Jack Phillips is no longer just a baker, he's a cake artist. The other individual, Baronel Stutzman, is not just a florist, she's a floral artist. They've done that to sort of transform the argument from this is someone who is violating public accommodations law by saying we don't serve your kind, trying to say instead that these artists' free expression is being violated by the government by enforcement of civil rights laws.
So this is, I'm assuming, they think protecting themselves from analogies to the Jim Crow era of the United States, where restaurants and other places would refuse to serve African Americans. So they're saying that this isn't a service they're performing, but their artistic expression.
Exactly, because there was a case in the 1960s involving a barbecue restaurant called Piggy Park, where the owner refused to serve African-American customers claiming a religious objection to doing so. That case reached the Supreme Court on an attorney's fees question, so the court didn't consider the case on the merits. But the barbecue owner said he didn't have to pay the plaintiff's attorney's fees. But because the court found that his claim of a religious exemption from the civil rights laws was patently frivolous, he did have to pay their attorney's fees. So that case kind of casts a shadow over their religious claim in this case, their claim that having to serve the same-sex couple for their wedding violates the baker's free exercise rights under the First Amendment. So they've sort of transformed the whole scenario into Jack Phillips is a cake artist, and forcing him to serve a same-sex couple for their wedding is compelled speech by the government in violation of his free speech rights under the First Amendment. It's a rather simple argument.
let's talk about the bigger part of the story then, and that is Alliance Defending Freedom. How influential is this organization? You write that they're trying to position themselves as the right-wing equivalent of the ACLU.
Yes, and they were founded on that basis. They were founded on the idea that the ACLU is bad for America and un-American, and that they were going to form a Christian answer to it. But notably, they were also forming this organization. This is back in the early to mid 90s, because they saw the march and advance of LGBTQ rights. And they back then viewed that as dangerous or threatening to Christians, conservative Christians like themselves, to the religious right. So getting to this point is sort of was a little bit foreseen in the trajectory of the organization, in the sense that they viewed every advance of LGBTQ rights as a threat to Christianity.
So I understand, and you write that this is an organization that now has influence in the Trump administration, in government. How did they get this way? Because you have to be pretty competent in legal norms, and you have to be a well-trained lawyer in order to be able to advance these cases, and you have to have the money to do all of this. I mean, you know, the ACLU's lawyers are highly trained people, so I'm assuming the ADF realized that if they wanted to sort of match them, they were going to have to train an army of lawyers. So how do they do this? Who are the lawyers that they deploy?
So they have over 50 staff lawyers on their staff at ADF. But they've also trained many, many lawyers through two programs that they have. They have a Blackstone Legal Fellowship, which is for law students, where the law students listen to lectures, they're given an internship. So it's sort of a combination of teaching and professional networking for them. To date, ADF has claimed to have trained 1,800 law students in this program. Many of them have gone on to government service, to serving in attorney general's offices at the state level, federal government service, that sort of thing. They also have a program that's called their allied attorneys. They claim there are over 3,000 of those across the country. These are people who undergo training with ADF in their Christian worldview of the law, and who volunteer to provide pro bono work on ADF's behalf. So not only do they have more than 50 attorneys on staff to bring cases, they can rely on this army of allied attorneys. But in addition to that, they see these attorneys who've been through their programs as future leaders. So these future leaders end up in government service just as ADF would want them to. And the Trump administration has embraced this. The Deputy General Counsel at the Department of Health and Human Services is a former ADF staff attorney. And ADF's current attorneys have had a great deal of influence over Jeff Sessions' Justice Department. They've provided advice to him. The Justice Department, in turn, has filed a supporting brief in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case and has asked for argument time. Now, I'll just go on a little digression here, and it's not really a digression, but tell you a little story that happened with regard to this article and this case. We reported in our story that Noel Francisco, the United States Solicitor General, who has filed the brief in the Masterpiece Cake Shop on behalf of the United States government supporting ADF's position and asked for argument time in the case, is one of these allied attorneys with ADF. That was based on ADF's own website, where they had a couple of press releases about Francisco's participation in an Establishment Clause case that they had last year, 2016, where they identified him as an allied attorney. We reported this, and after publication, ADF pushed back and claimed that he was never an allied attorney with them. And they subsequently changed their website, changed the press releases to not say that anymore. So, but even without Francisco being an allied attorney, he still was co-counsel with them. He still has long expressed sympathy and a desire to advance precisely these sorts of claims, the claims of bakers and artists, cake artists and florists, caterers, that sort of thing, to be exempt from having to comply with civil rights laws that require them to serve all equally. This is the law in 21 states around the country.
Hmm. So let's talk about what an allied attorney is. This is not necessarily a legal term. And by the way, if you're just tuning in, ADF is Alliance Defending Freedom. This is the organization on the radical right that the Southern Poverty Law Center has singled out and that wants to be the Christian rights answer to the ACLU. They're the force behind the so-called cake artist, essentially a baker in Colorado who refused to make a cake for a same-sex couple. So what does one have to do in order to become a, quote, allied attorney?
Well, they have to apply to the program. The website, as we reported in the story, the website, ADF's website, said that they had to sign a statement of faith, a statement of Christian faith. Again, after we published the story, they changed the website to not say that anymore. So there's a little interesting reaction, shall we say, from ADF after we published the story. So basically, these allied attorneys are basically agreeing with ADF's view of the world, agreeing that Christians are under threat by secular society, by the secular legal system, actually. And they agree to sign up with ADF to be available to them to do pro bono work and help ADF bring the many, many cases that it brings across the country. Its docket includes not just these sorts of cases like Masterpiece Cake Shop, but they bring cases against school districts that adopt policies that allow trans students equal access to bathrooms and locker rooms. They defend school districts that may have some program that evangelizes in violation of the separation of church and state. They represent conservative student groups in campus free speech cases. They litigate in support of restrictions on abortion. They long fought against marriage equality. And it's precisely their public statements, their public slurs of LGBTQ people that led the Southern Poverty Law Center to designate it as a hate group.
Wow. So their agenda is extremely broad. They seem to have their fingers in a lot of pies, a lot of these issues that have become flashpoints around the idea of so-called religious liberty. They seem to be involved. And it's really interesting that they make their so-called allied attorneys take some sort of pledge of allegiance to Christianity rather than the Constitution. That this is, of course, not about religious freedom, but about the Christian faith and the domination of Christianity. It would be really interesting to see them be challenged on applying these same rights to, say, people of the Muslim faith or any other faith, Judaism or Hinduism, right? And in fact, when such things do ever rear their head, you hear screams and shouts of Sharia law taking over the United States.
Right. Well, I just wanted to point out that they represent a particular view of Christianity that not all American Christians subscribe to by a long shot, right? But it's interesting that you bring up Muslims because they did they have not, as far as we could find, and they did not identify for us any cases in which they represented a Muslim in a religious freedom case. They have weighed in on cases involving Muslim prisoners, but that was largely to make an argument about how the court should apply the relevant statute in those cases. There's a federal statute that protects the religious rights of institutionalized persons. So that's why these were prisoner cases. But it was very interesting. One of the amicus briefs that they filed in a case that did involve Muslims was an amicus brief the case challenging Trump's second Muslim ban. And in that amicus brief, they argued that the court should not consider Trump's own statements, his tweets, his public statements, in determining whether the Muslim ban violates the Establishment Clause.
So they weren't there to protect the religious rights of Muslims. They were there to protect the president so that he could enforce his ban?
Yeah, well, to basically say that the court, they took no position on the ban itself, but they basically said you shouldn't consider, you should just look at the paper that the ban is printed on. You should not consider anything that the president said about it. Now, think about the implications of that, right? So a government, well, you know, the federal government, a state government, they could enact some sort of policy that on its face doesn't say this is a Muslim ban, but that the public official enacting it could make all kinds of statements admitting that it was, but that the court shouldn't consider those public statements. So think about the implications if the courts were to adopt this view of how to evaluate Establishment Clause claims. Governments could adopt policies that sort of seemed possibly neutral on paper, but it ha if the courts had to ignore the public statements of the public officials, they wouldn't even be able to evaluate the motivation behind them, which is obviously the crucial inquiry there.
So you also point out in your article that a figure who has been very much in the news lately, Roy Moore, is associated with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom, this network of well-funded Christian right attorneys. How is he involved?
Well, in a couple of ways, he was the founder of another religious right legal organization, which is much, much smaller than ADF, called the Foundation for Moral Law. And ADF gave the Foundation for Moral Law a grant, because one of the things that ADF also does is to give grants to other religious right organizations to do various things, to engage in litigation or do other things. Well, the grant that they gave to the Foundation for Moral Law was a grant to study a model rule adopted by the American Bar Association that was intended to address discrimination within the legal profession and gives the potential to discipline attorneys who engage in activities or make statements that are discriminatory against people based on sexual orientation and gender identity, but also, you know, race, ethnicity, that sort of thing. And ADF is against states adopting this model rule that the American Bar Association adopted, and they gave this grant to the Foundation for Moral Law to study this for them and prepare a report for them. And also, one of the attorneys who, at some point along the way in Roy Moore's campaign, and came out and spoke on behalf of Roy Moore, he is one of ADF's allied attorneys that we spoke of before. And he boasted on his website that he was inducted into the honor corps of ADF's allied attorney corps because he had donated at least 450 hours of pro bono service to them.
So Roy Moore donated
They're not.
450.
Not Roy Moore, an
And it.
attorney who has been
I see.
has spokesman for Roy Moore during the campaign.
I see. So, how well funded is this organization? I mean, they must need a lot of money to make their agenda come true. Who are they getting their money from? Is it, donations from Christian evangelicals around the country, or do they have, a big donor like a Robert Mercer type?
Well, there's a lot that we don't know about their big donors because they get a large segment of their tens of millions of dollars in charitable contributions through a donor-advised fund called the National Christian Foundation. And so these donor-advised funds basically enable people to give money to an organization through them. And if you're a foundation, they get a lot of foundation support. ADF gets a lot of foundation support, which has to be reported on tax returns. But if a foundation didn't want to have that reported, they could give money through the National Christian Foundation, through the donor advised fund, and never be identified. But there is one big donor that we do know about through foundations that has given to ADF, and that is the foundation of Betsy DeVos's parents. Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, if you might recall from her confirmation hearings, she was asked about this because she was listed as an officer on her parents' foundation's tax returns, and her parents' Foundation has given about $1 million to ADF over the years. And she said that it was a clerical error that her name was listed on the as an officer, and that she played no role in it. But
wow. So there's another, yet another connection to the Trump administration and this organization that's fueling this idea, this, in a way, very perverted idea of religious freedom and liberty. So let's talk about how the ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom, is normalizing, both in our national discourse and even through the courts, the very idea of what the First Amendment is supposed to protect and what our Constitution is supposed to protect. Are they succeeding in this normalization?
Well, they lost Masterpiece Cake Shop in Colorado. So this was a case that was brought in Colorado under Colorado's public accommodation law. They lost and they brought it to the Supreme Court. But they're hoping to build on other cases that they've brought over the years where they've succeeded in, for example, describing a school district potentially not allowing a Bible group to use its facilities for an after-school meeting as viewpoint discrimination. They've tried to change the conversation, say, about the Establishment Clause by describing application of the Establishment Clause as viewpoint discrimination against Christians. Or they've tried to piggyback a little bit on the idea of the Hobby Lobby case, where the employer wanted to have a religious exemption from having to provide the contraception coverage that's required by the Affordable Care Act. That case was not brought, I mean, it was brought under the First Amendment, but it was decided under the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So they won that. I think that they've succeeded in changing. They did not represent Hobby Lobby. They represented Conestoga Wood, which was another religious employer that objected to it. Those two cases were consolidated together. So they essentially, you know, contributed to helping win the Hobby Lobby case. But basically, in that sense, they changed the public conversation about religious exemptions from these things by saying, look, this is just the sincerely held religious belief of these good Christian people, right? So you don't want to make them, the government shouldn't make them violate their religious beliefs by providing contraception to their contraception coverage to their employees, or by baking this cake for the same-sex couple. So I do think that they've had a lot of success changing the public conversation about what religious freedom really means, but they've had sort of stop-and-go success with changing that in the courts. But we'll see what happens with Masterpiece Cake Shop. If they win that, that would be a monumental and significant change to the way the courts see those.
Right. So if the Supreme Court's decision on the Masterpiece Cake case goes the way of the Alliance Defending Freedom, what sort of a precedent could that set? I mean, I'm wondering if that would, okay, so this is an issue of whether or not a cake baker is considered an artist and their artistic expression is at stake. So it might apply to a florist, but could it apply to, you know, transgender people being able to use public bathrooms? How far, what's a worst case scenario? What could the reality be if the worst case scenario plays out at the Supreme Court?
Well, if the Supreme Court were to find that application of the Colorado civil rights law to Jack Phillips violated his free exercise rights, that would just be a stunning change, right? Because that doesn't implicate the claim of him being an artist. So that could mean that restaurant owners, landlords, hotels, beds and breakfasts, that sort of thing. I mean, it really runs the gamut. It could be doctors, nurses, health clinics saying it violates my religious freedom to serve you, to provide you medical services, to provide you health care, to for an accountant to say I can't do the tax returns of a same-sex couple. If the court were to rule on the free speech claim, perhaps those the ability to make those kinds of claims would be a little bit more constrained.
I see.
Because So maybe a doctor couldn't say it's my artistic expression,
But
right?
a restaurant could say our food artists aren't allowed to, you know, don't want to serve
It
couples,
could
same-sex
be, it
couples.
could still be a very wide range of things, because it could be a hotel owner or a bed and breakfast owner. You know, the bed and breakfast is an artistic expression of me, and I can't have this same-sex couple staying here, that sort of thing. Now, ADF insists that this is only about the wedding, that Jack Phillips would happily make a cake for a gay person, but he cannot make the cake for the wedding. But, you know, once you start going down that path, right, you know, I don't serve your kind of wedding to I don't serve your kind.
Right. I mean, so Jack Phillips has a problem with gay marriage, but he may have a colleague who has a problem with the existence of gay people,
Right.
not just their right to get married. And then where
Exactly.
does it end?
And think about it too in terms of, like, when you think about same-sex couples being parents and the impact on their children too that this would have, right? So if a same-sex Jewish couple came to Jack Phillips and said, "Can you bake a cake for our daughter's bat mitzvah?" And he was like, "Well, I can't because I don't believe in same-sex couples having children," right? So I think that their argument that it's really only about the wedding is potentially, you know, much broader than that.
Well, Sarah, where can people find out more about your work and read about the Alliance Defending Freedom, this organization that really does need to be exposed?
So the story about the Alliance Defending Freedom is up at the Nation magazine website, thenation.com. And to read more about my other work, you can go and look at my profile at the website of the Investigative Fund at the Nation Institute, or at my own website, sarahposner.com.
We'll post those links to our website as well as directly to your article. Sarah, thanks for all the work you've done and for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
Sarah Posner is a reporter with the Investigative Fund at the Nation Institute, and her 2008 book is entitled God's Prophets, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters. We've been discussing her newest investigation, just published in The Nation, called The Christian Legal Army Behind Masterpiece Cake Shop. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.